and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis, and we are in the middle of conference tournaments as we get you ready for Selection Sunday. This coming Sunday, the NCAA tournament will be revealed. What a week it was in the Tri-State. We have our first guaranteed team from the Tri-State. I know UConn is going to be there. We all know that, but it's not a guarantee until their name is revealed or they win the Big East tournament. We do have one team that has already locked up their spot, guaranteed. Wagner. Did you see that? Wagner did the unthinkable. They became the first team in Northeast Conference history to win three straight road games in the conference tournament. They were the number six. They beat the number three, Sacred Heart, the number one, Central Connecticut, and the number two, Merrimack, all on the road. We will talk to their head coach, Donald Copeland, who has been one of the most popular coaches across the country, as everyone wants to talk to him. He will be on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast once again. We'll have that in just a bit. But first, I want to get to Seton Hall and St. John's at the Garden. This was the matchup that meant the most. Seton Hall and St. John's in the Big East tournament. It had been done four times before, but nothing quite like this. Why? Because both teams playing for their NCAA tournament lives. We think Seton Hall will still be there, but St. John's really needed this one. And boy, did they show it. This was a game for all of 18 minutes. The first 18 minutes were very good. St. John's and Seton Hall went back and forth for the first 8 minutes, and then St. John's kind of took control about the 10-minute mark, and they started pulling ahead. But then Seton Hall countered and went on a run and closed to 41-40. Then came, to me, the most important 5 minutes of the game. The last 2 minutes of the first half and the first 2.5 minutes or so of the second half. St. John's scored the last 4 points of the first half after Seton Hall had closed to 41-40. St. John's scored a baseline jumper by Joel Soriano, and they scored a buzzer-beating jumper by RJ Lewis to give St. John's momentum going into the half and the lead at 45-40. I said the next 4 minutes of the second half are going to be critical. Will Seton Hall be able to stay within an arm's distance? Will Seton Hall be able to answer St. John's and either stay close or regain the lead? Or would St. John's momentum carry over and they would extend their lead? Well, we quickly knew. St. John's came out like a ball of fire, and Seton Hall looked like they were still in the locker room. A 5-point lead became 7, became 9, became 11. Seton Hall calls timeout, and for all intents and purposes, game over. They never recovered. Okay? They never recovered. Unlike the first two meetings, where Seton Hall was tougher. Seton Hall was the aggressor. Seton Hall was taking it to St. John's. Seton Hall dictated tempo. Seton Hall controlled the rebounds. Seton Hall controlled the turnovers. St. John's did all of that. You could see the way RJ Lewis was driving to the hoop, muscling his way, bouncing off of Dre Davis, who had a really tough game. All right, everyone for Seton Hall had a tough game. The difference was St. John's toughness. They beat Seton Hall at their own game. Toughness, rebounding. They did to Seton Hall what Seton Hall did to other teams, and Seton Hall didn't know how to respond. Maybe because St. John's needed it more. Maybe because St. John's was tired of losing to Seton Hall. Maybe because St. John's was saying, not this time, not in our building. And instead of responding, Seton Hall just let St. John's do what they did. And they got punched in the mouth, and they simply just said, all right, go ahead, I'm done. For a team that's so tough, for a team that's so gritty, for a team like Seton Hall that has won some outstanding games this year, right? They beat UConn. They beat Marquette. They won at Providence. They won at Butler. They swept Butler. They swept St. John's. For a team that has had so many great wins, man, they have had some head-scratching, double-digit blowouts where they have been so non-competitive in the second half that you're wondering what team this is. And afterward, we saw Shaheen Holloway say, I don't know what team that is, basically. You know, St. John's out-toughed us. They beat us at our own game. So that's why Seton Hall's metrics are so poor, all right? Because 8-9 times this year, they're just getting blown out by 20-plus points. St. John's doesn't have a lot of those losses. They have very few of those losses on their resume. That's why their metrics are lower than 30. That's why they're a top 30 net team. They are peaking at the right time, St. John's. They have won 6 straight games. They very much can challenge UConn. I think UConn will win, but would it surprise you if St. John's beats UConn? Anything can happen, right? It's St. John's building. UConn can call it Stores South all they want, but there are going to be plenty of St. John's fans in that building too. All right? It all started with Rick Pitino's comments following the loss to Seton Hall. And I am not going to say that Rick Pitino came into that press conference and tactfully said, you know what? It's time for me to throw these guys onto the bus. It's time for me to send a message. We know that didn't happen. He can talk all he wanted. He was speaking emotionally. He regrets at 24 hours, 48 hours later, he regretted saying those things. He knew they were wrong. He apologized 48 hours later after the Georgetown win. And he laughed about it, saying how they had lateral quickness, right? It was a joke. He didn't know. He had thrown up the white flag saying, you know what? I knew we weren't going to win this year. I knew it was going to be tough to win this year. He admitted defeat. But yet, I want to credit those players because they're the ones that rallied. They're the ones that said, you know what, guys? He's right. They're the ones that have put in the hard work. RJ Lewis, practicing with shin splints for the first time in weeks, going through several days of practice. He knew the importance of this. And that was the difference for St. John's. RJ Lewis showed up with one of his best games, in my opinion, his best game of the season. 18 points, 9 rebounds. Joel Soriano showing up for the first time in 6 weeks. 14 points, 12 rebounds. Those two players were MIA in the first two meetings with Seton Hall. They were the difference makers. Danis Jenkins, a player who has been so consistent this year, you knew he was going to bring it. Jordan Dingle, you knew they were going to bring it. Who else would step up? RJ Lewis stepped up. Joel Soriano stepped up. Naheem Aline stepped up. Chris Ledlam stepped up. 6 players in double figures in this stretch. Maybe you want to say Creighton was the most impressive win. I'm going to say this was their most impressive win, because they beat Seton Hall with toughness. They out-rebounded them by 10. They dominated points in the paint, 42-26, all right? Plus 16 points in the paint, plus 10 rebounding. Complete opposite of what had happened in the first two games. St. John's has earned their ticket. Now, they still have an opportunity to win the Big East tournament and guarantee their spot. They are in. Meanwhile, Seton Hall is a team that now is likely in, but there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees that they're in. Could they be a 10 seed? Could they be an 11 seed? Could they play in Dayton? Well, what if Pitt goes on a miraculous run? What if New Mexico goes on a miraculous run? What if Ohio State goes on a miraculous run? What if Providence goes on a miraculous one? run and one of those teams wins it all, right? You still have some bid stealers on the bubble, some teams that can push Seton Hall further down. St. John's pushed them down a little bit and likely surged ahead. I think Seton Hall has done enough to merit an NCAA tournament bid. Why? They finished in fourth place in the second toughest conference in the country. How are you going to take the fifth place team in St. John's and the seventh place team in Providence and not take the fourth place team? That wouldn't be a good look. I think they're in. I think worst case scenario, they're in Dayton in a play-in game. Otherwise, they're a 10 seed and somehow they avoid that. I think they've done enough. Shaheen Holloway feels that way. They're going to prepare and hope that they hear their name called on Selection Sunday. And if they do, they better bring toughness. They better bring some of that St. John's lateral quickness. They better bring a fight and a desire that got them so many good wins this year and prove that they belong. If anyone can do it, it's Shaheen Holloway. Meanwhile, hats off to St. John's. Whether you want to give Rick Pitino the credit for his speech, whether you want to give the players the credit for responding in a positive way when they easily could have checked out, whatever it is, that is the turning point of St. John's season. Rick Pitino's speech. There's no two ways about it. Wherever you want to give the credit, that is the turning point. And St. John's has reached their goal that they set in the beginning of the year. It wasn't easy. It wasn't how St. John's thought they'd get there. But the bottom line is, they got there. And 10 years from now, people are going to remember that Rick Pitino was the coach in his first year that brought St. John's back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2019. However they choose to remember it, that is how they will remember it. All right. Before I get to my guest, Donald Copeland, I want to tell you about our new sponsor, Mike Supa from Ward White Sotheby's Realty. If you're interested in buying, listing, or selling a home down the Jersey Shore, Monmouth County, Ocean County, give Mike Supa a call at 201-988-2577. I know he will take care of you. And let him know you heard about it from Brian on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right. It is now my pleasure to welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Donald Copeland, the head coach of the 2024 Northeast Conference champion, Wagner Seahawks. Donald, congratulations. Welcome back to the show. That has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Northeast Conference champion.
No, it's great, man. Thank you so much for having me. And no, it's so greatly appreciated, man. You know, and the Northeast Conference, I've been in it, coaching in it now for a while. I know how tough of a league it is to play in. You know, there's so many good coaches here. There's so many good players here. It's been so competitive. You know, each year there's always somebody else that's able to rise and win. I'm just glad that, you know, this year was our time.
You know, it was your time. And what was that feeling like, you know, when that buzzer clicked and you knew euphoria had set in? I saw it on television, and you have to go through the handshake line and, you know, show decorum and all that. And then you got emotional. So how did you let that emotion get to you afterward? You started tearing up. How did you hold it all in until that moment?
To be honest with you, I guess I'm messed up in the head. I was coaching to the buzzer sounded. Okay, I know we had a, you know, probably, I forget, it was maybe a double possession lead or something like that. I wanted to finish the game. I always want to coach my team to the very end. And then honestly, I got emotional in the handshake line, you know, because just when that it happened, it was, you know, happiness, relief. It was so many emotions going on. And I never prepared for how you would act if you won, you know. I just wanted to get there. And then what you saw was just a lot of emotion from all that's happened and the work to get to this place, not just my season, but my life, my career, the people I've been around. You know, it was a great, great feeling, a great experience.
You've done it as a player, going back to your days at St. Anthony, winning championships with those great Bob Hurley teams, right? Your backcourt mates, Elijah Ingram, Dwayne Lee. You experienced two NCAA tournaments at Seton Hall in 04 and 06, and now you're doing it as a head coach. How do you compare them?
No, I mean, somebody asked me this before. I also was on the team with Coach Willard when we went to the NCAA tournament before he left to Maryland.
Thank you. My bad. Yep.
And I know then, you know, and now obviously experiencing now how hard it is to achieve this as a coach. You know, I thought I lived and died with wins and losses as a player until I started coaching. Now you just realize how much goes into this, you know, just so you can see that 40 minutes on the game. You know, it's so much stuff behind the scenes and the build up to it, the preparation and making sure everything's got to look right, sound right. And then you got to play the game. So I can say I loved it as a player, you know, for sure. I have probably a greater appreciation achieving it as a coach, because I know guys, you know, guys don't often get this opportunity, you know, so I respect that. You know, I really respect that, because it's, you never know. You never know. So but to achieve it right now, how we did, you know, I couldn't be more happier.
So take me through that game, Donald. You guys had control of that game in the second half. You built a big lead, double digits. It seemed like you had control. And just like, you know, any other type of game you're in, you're trying to weather the storm. And Merrimack, in front of their home fans, finally takes a lead with about 8 minutes to go. The place is jumping. You're thinking, as I'm thinking as a fan, like, oh man, like, how is Wagner going to respond here? How are they going to get back in here and take the lead? Does Merrimack have control? And from that point on, you outscore them 13-4 on the road. I mean, how did you do it?
Yeah, no, hats off to Merrimack. The atmosphere that they have was everything you want in a championship game, man. And you know, I can't say it enough how much respect I have for Joey Gallo and what he's been able to accomplish. You know, the transition from Division II to Division I isn't always easy, you know, and he's been very consistent in our league since he's made that transition. And then playing against them in that game, you know, they win the championship the year before, and now they have returning players that have championship pedigree, you know. But going into the game, we knew it was going to be a hard game. It was going to be a hard game. We prepared for hard. You know, whether we were going to be up or down, we never wanted to waver. You know, so many times throughout the year, you know, our record wound up being below 500 in conference play, but there were four games this year we lost by a possession. Which can always go a different way. And that's all we kind of talked about, was getting to the final 3-4 minutes of the game. And now that's when you got to make toughness plays. That's the little plays you got to kind of make. So the fact that we had that lead, yeah, you know, it kind of shifted momentum. But my players really, in those huddles, they were talking to each other and me more than I kind of was talking to them. And that's kind of what you want, you know, at that moment, because I can't score any baskets for them. I can only really point and yell right now. But no, they stay composed. They stay together. The six guys that are injured, their coaches, they're staying with them. And, you know, we were prepared for that moment, I can say, because we did not think it was going to be an easy game, no matter what the lead was with Merrimack. And just to see these guys respond the way they did, you know, I was very proud of them.
Yeah. And coach, you're doing it with seven healthy players. You just said there are six players that have been injured since the end of December, early January. You've been doing this for 2.5 months. That is not easy. How did you keep these guys fresh? How did you keep them confident and healthy?
Yeah, no, that's the million-dollar question. Like, I constantly get answered, asked, excuse me. But I got to be honest. I keep saying this. If I tell you I knew what I was doing, I'd be lying to you. I kind of just would go on at the fly of it. You know, you had to play by feel. I really never knew what this was going to look like. And quite frankly, I probably made a ton of mistakes throughout this. You know, you don't have a traditional practice. We haven't been able to go live since December 27th, since our last player got injured. You know, that's when I really scrapped live. So it was really unconventional. My coaches, they did a phenomenal job. The staff, they stepped up as token players, you know, when we had to go over scouting reports and other things that the teams had to do. And they just took on more those other players, the six players that were injured, they were always involved in practice. They always were involved in everything, all aspects. It wasn't like they were just on the sideline. They were loud. They were talking. They were always ingrained in it. The players that I had, they gave me everything they had. They gave me everything they had. The only thing I can say I actually probably did to help us, I remain consistent in what our culture is. We needed to sound a certain way. We needed to practice a certain way. Whatever we were doing, we needed to move a certain way. And I wasn't moving off of it. I held them accountable for everything. We went into games. We prepared like we were supposed to win. When we lost, there were consequences that, I made them feel it. They responded, and then we moved on. I wasn't going to allow us to feel sorry for ourselves, pretty much. And that's just kind of how I was raised, how I was wired, because none of these teams care. When the teams beat us, when we had
That's
seven players, they celebrated as they
right.
should. It's hard to win a game, you know? So we had to keep moving forward. The best way I could normalize everything was to coach them like we had 13, and that's what I did.
You just said it. You know, that's your Jersey City upbringing, playing for a Hall of Fame coach like Bob Hurley. I'm sure those practices prepared you for these moments. You said consequences. I'm curious. Are we talking wind sprints? Are we talking suicides? What are we talking about here?
And I point to the line and they know what it means. And those injured guys, they're a part of it too. So the guys that have leg injuries, they got to do push-ups, sit-ups or something. And the other guys, everybody's held accountable. And you know what? The best thing about our culture, the best thing about my kids is that when I tell them it's time to get on that line, no one looks at me like I'm crazy. They just go right to it and then they handle it and they move forward. And that's the response that's expected with adversity, and that's the culture we're able to have. That's the testament to the character of the kids I have, because I did not make it easy for them. I did not. And, they responded better than anybody could ever ask.
So when the going got tough, you told them to get going.
Yeah, no, listen, we upheld our culture all the way to the end. I mean, I've been telling people the night before Central Connecticut. We've lost to Central Connecticut now two times this season by one possession. They're the number one team in our league. It's a semifinal game. We're at their place. We practiced at our gym, and then we drove up there and had like a dummy offense kind of shoot around at their place. And I ran the team because the gym didn't sound right. It didn't sound right. We ran, and I kind of told them, listen, if you think we're coming this far to not uphold our culture, you got another thing coming. I don't care about the game tomorrow. We're going to look and sound a certain way. When we get together, we're going to prepare a certain way. And that's the mindset we had, and they allow me to do it. And I'm not going to make it seem like I have problem kids. I don't. I don't. I really they're beautiful kids, tough, allow me to coach them. But they also allow me to hold them accountable, and we do that and we move forward. So, that's the best way I could normalize everything for us.
Man, I have so much respect for that because most coaches would just, give a little lecture. We got to save them. I don't want to tire them out the night before a game.
Well, I had
And you're
assistant coaches
punishing them.
looking
You're
at
like,
me.
listen,
Yeah, no,
you.
sorry. Assistant coaches are looking like, hey, no, wait. No. I'm not. And I'm like, yeah, you guys get away from me at this point, right? Like,
Well, you talk about things that you may have done wrong, but obviously that works. So, Donald, God bless you for not changing from your culture, your character, like you said, and the culture that you have there. I saw a lot of Instagram and Twitter post hashtag toughness. Was that you saying that, or was that somebody managing that account, toughness?
no, that's me. That's our motto. That's what we say in the huddles. That's what we preach every day. Toughness, anything in life is tough, and you have to respond to it. You have to be tough. There's a direct correlation to handling things off the court the way you need to handle them on the court. I'm a true believer that you can't be one thing off the court and then now show up for the 2 hours I have you, right? And now you're gonna snap into be something else. That's just not it. So toughness is our thing. We want to that's what we are. That's who we are.
Yeah, and toughness has gotten you a championship, coach, and there have been a lot of very good, excellent Wagner teams throughout the year, years that never made it. And you've been a part of Bashir Mason's teams as an assistant, teams that were expected number one in the conference that didn't win a championship. It's only happened one time before in 2003. And now, you know, with all the great coaches, PJ Carlissimo, Mike Dean, Danny Hurley, Bashir that didn't win, do you think about them and those players and those coaches and as you carry this championship that they've all kind of won it?
Absolutely. They, you know, all those coaches you just named, right up to Bosh, who's my, you know, my childhood best friend. They laid the foundation. They laid the groundwork. All those great players that we've had here, all those great teams, they made it cool for these kids to want to come to Wagner, you know, and now they knew what the culture was. They knew what the expectation was, because the only thing we talked about was championships and also getting to that point, you know, and working every day and being tough. They are a part of this for all of us. They are. They really are. This is our championship. And they've embraced it that way. And I'm making sure that they view it that way, because that we don't get to this point right now had it not been for the people before us that laid a great foundation and groundwork.
And it goes to show you how hard it is, to win three straight games in a conference tournament and to do it on the road the way you did. I could say right now that, you know, some of those Wagner teams that you were an assistant coach on, I can hypothetically say, yeah, they had more talent. But I guess it shows you hard work, toughness can outbeat any talent.
Yeah, no, I think it's what I kind of say to these guys, because you work hard enough, because you want it so bad, it right? It doesn't promise you anything. You know, you put all this time in and effort and everything, and everybody does, right? It doesn't guarantee anything. You just got to be willing to stay true to who you are. And then now you'll live with those results. And for sure, these other teams that we've had, I mean, we've had multiple all-conference players. We have teams with 3-4 all-conference players. We had the player of the year, the rookie of the year. This team had one all-conference player and 7 players. For me to walk away and say, hey, this is our most talented team, no, I can't say that. I can't.
Right.
I can't say that. And I tell these guys that. But at the same time, they embody what the culture is. And it just so happened, it clicked at the right time for us. Again, we don't take it for granted. Great teams in this league, really good coaches in this league. Things went well for us right now. And, you know, we're appreciative of it.
And you're being, you know, interviewed by all the, you're the man of the hour, right? And thank you for taking time out of your schedule. I'm sure you've had a number of interviews. I can't imagine how many texts and phone calls you had. I saw somewhere that Coach Hurley, you know, you had a 30-minute conversation with him following the win. What was that like, your mentor?
It was great. It was great. You know, he was so happy and proud, and we talked about a lot of things, and you know, I still communicate with him. Him, my father and him really laid a good foundation for me as a person. My father was a college coach. He coached me growing up before I went to high school, and he was a very militant person. He coached me. He coached Bashir Mason. He coached Dwayne Lee, who's an assistant coach at GW. We all grew up together in the game, you know, and he prepared us just as well as Coach Hurley did. And talking to Coach Hurley, we bounced a lot of old stories. You know, he talks about he always uses examples from when I was playing, you know, about what was happening now. And no, he's proud. He's proud, you know, and it wasn't easy playing for him, you know, and I do it similar to the way he does it, you know. He always would say St. Anthony's isn't for everybody. And it wasn't. It really wasn't. You know, you had to be a certain way every day. And I try to model that, you know, because anything you want in life is hard and you got to be held accountable for it. And that's what you try to do. So those are some of the things we talked about. But he was happy. He was really proud.
So how I bet he was. And, you know, a proud moment for New Jersey basketball, a proud moment for St. Anthony. Yes. So going back to your Seton Hall roots, you know, you now have an opportunity to join Shaheen Holloway as an NCAA tournament coach, to join Dan Hurley as an NCAA tournament coach, three Seton Hall point guards who have coached in the NCAA tournament. What's in the water? What is it about these Seton Hall point guards? And how proud of you are of that trio right there?
No, I'm very, very proud to be a part of that trio. You know, it just speaks to the tradition at Seton Hall, you know, just the basketball energy that comes with not being in this area, you know, the New Jersey, New York area. And then guys from this area, you know, want to uphold things the way we kind of came up in the game. And being from Seton Hall makes it that much more special, because there's a number of us that are coaching right now, have our own programs. So I know that's a proud thing. I'm definitely appreciative of it, that I can be one of the guys to accomplish this, so I don't take it for granted because I know there's been so many others, so, but it is special, especially being from Seton Hall.
So the people that have called you, the coaches that you've talked to, what advice are they giving you as you prepare for Selection Sunday and you try to figure out who you're playing? You're going to be in Dayton. That seems to be what it is as a 16 seed. So what advice are you getting right now?
The only thing I'm getting is really just go try to win another one. Again, I still only have seven players, so nobody can give me any advice on how to get ready for that. I don't think. I'm not sure anybody's
No,
still
I don't think
encountered
so.
that. But no, they're telling me enjoy it, enjoy it. And they don't have to tell me that. I know how hard it is. I have too much respect for the seat, to not enjoy it because I know how hard it is to get to this point. But everyone's pushing for me, obviously. And we're gonna do the best we can. We're gonna approach it the same way we always have, but I do want my kids to enjoy this. I really, really do. Because this is you come to college, you want to play in this, you dream about it. And these guys don't have the same opportunity that the other high level schools have. So the fact that they were able to achieve it, I got to make sure that they enjoy it the right way.
Now, and listen, you've been there, you know what it feels like to win, upsetting Arizona when you were with Seton Hall in 2004. You know what it's like to lose. What do you take from all those experiences as an assistant coach at Seton Hall, as a player, and bring into your preparation?
No, you know what? It's funny. I actually we had a couple of days off. I like I said, I got the seven guys. I had to kind of give them 2 days off to get refreshed and get as healthy as we
They
possibly can.
earned it, right, Coach?
Yeah. No. Well, it wasn't your typical. What it wasn't off. We're not doing nothing. We did some things, but we got back today on the court. And before it, I talked to them about this right here, that right there. My experience with the tournament, not just as a player and coaching and. It really was. We got to understand this. The next game we play, that team's going to be as ready as you are. They're going to be as excited. They're not going to care who they're playing. And that's not to say that we're not going to or we expect that, right? But what we can control right now, because more than likely it's going to be an opponent that's probably still playing, we got to have three really good practices. We got to be really locked in. We got to have the energy, the bounce, the pace. We can't take steps backwards because now we won a championship because I know everybody in the room more than anything wants to perform well on this big stage. And the way we're going to do that is by right now, the next 3 days have to be phenomenal. And today was outstanding. It really was from an energy and a detailed standpoint. I didn't have to put anybody on the line. That was great.
That's good to hear.
No, but I might change it up. I might find a reason to put them on tomorrow. So that
You know what? Like you said, you read the room, and if you like what you see, you go with it. If you don't like what you see, there are repercussions. So you must be watching the tournaments, right? Do you have any idea who your possible first round opponent could be in Dayton?
I really don't know. I mean, this is my first experience with it at this level too, also, so I'm pretty sure it would be it's obviously gonna be another 16 seed. Who that might be, you never know. I think there's some tournaments still going on that need to still shape up, but
Okay, so
whoever it
you
is,
haven't even started that part yet. Like, oh, we could play this team. Let's get some film. We could get that team.
I'm not. I'm really trying to focus on us right now. I think that'll work itself out the way it needs to. I got assistant coaches working and doing things like that. I'm trying to really keep these guys geared and focused on us and fine-tune some things that we probably need to, because it's different. We just played against teams that we know. The next opponent we're not going to know as well. We need to sharpen our own self up. So I do want to let them know to be themselves and enjoy this. That's a part of it. That's definitely part of it. Be who you've been. You don't need to come here and change anything about yourself right now. Be who you've been, and we've been a collected, connected unit, and that's all you got. That's all you can ask for.
Hey, you guys are champions, and no one could ever take that away from you. And coach, I wish you success. Hopefully you get that win, that first win, and you can get your opportunity to play a number one seed because that's likely what you're staring at. And I really wish you, you know, a lot of success out there. And from one Seton Hall alum to another, I just want to say you have made me proud. You've made a lot of people proud out there. You know, you're a Jersey guy through and through. You're a Seton Hall guy. And we all stick together. So congratulations. And I'm really proud of you, man.
No, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. We're gonna do the best we can.
All right. Go Wagner. Go Seahawks. And best of luck, Coach. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Donald Copeland, what a job he has done in just his second year as a head coach. As I said, bringing Wagner to their second NCAA tournament appearance ever. Man, 40 years old, a bright future indeed. He is going to be a very good one for a long time. All right, my thanks to Donald Copeland. My thanks to our sponsor, the North Jersey Vipers Softball Club. If you or your daughter or niece or someone you know wants to play high-level softball for an elite program, contact Bob Germano at northjerseyvipers.com. In our next episode, we will know how many teams from the tri-state will we have in the NCAA tournament. Wagner will be there. UConn will be there. St. John's will likely be there. Will Seton Hall be there? We think so. And one out of these three teams will likely be there. St. Peter's, Quinnipiac, Fairfield, from the MAC. What a banner year it could be in the tri-state. My name is Brian DeNovellis. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing and downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Continue to spread the word. I couldn't do it without you. Until next time, enjoy the games, everyone. So long.